Well, joining me now is my good friend and Tribune colleague, Hal Dardick. Hal covers county and city politics as part of the political team at the Chicago Tribune. And I always talk, Hal, that I consider Dean Richards the busiest man in show business, but last week you had to be the busiest man in show business. Thanks for joining me this morning.
Oh, my pleasure, okay. It was quite a week. I recovered yesterday. I slept in.
Very good. Very good. Well, I kind of closed the conversation with Alderman Ramirez Rosa about the issue of Forrest Claypool's abrupt departure. And I think I told you on Friday that now Forrest Claypool shares with issue of going to his own funeral, basically with that Friday performance. I mean, it was a very unusual press conference announcing his departure.
Oh, it really was. Instead of usually when someone resigns, they put out a statement, especially when they've resigned under a cloud like this, where there was an ethics investigation that recommended that he be fired for allegedly covering up his decisions that violated the Chicago Public Schools ethics code. But instead, the mayor stood up and sang his accolades for us, sort of praised himself and made very little reference to the fact that he was leaving under a cloud, saying that, you know, he made mistakes and it was time for him to move on, but he didn't, you know, elucidate on those mistakes. It was a sign, I think, of the friendship that these two men hold. The Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Forrest Claypool go back to 1980 to a congressional campaign where they first worked together, and they were Forrest was in law school, the mayor was still in college, and you know, over the years they've both been friends and associates with David Axelrod and Richard Daley and it was also, you know, to be fair, Forrest has always been viewed as someone who's an amazing sort of technocrat, if you will. He was brought in to situations at the Chicago Park District, at City Hall, at the CTA, to do very difficult tasks and accomplish them efficiently, even if he ruffled some feathers, particularly among union members, because he was prone to cutting jobs in all those places. But, you know, so he does deserve, you know, some praise for his 30 years of public service. But it was really odd because, you know, here you've got perhaps one of the most important things to residents of the city, Chicago Public Schools, and Forrest had done something. He brought in an attorney who had a conflict because he was still getting paid by the firm he was overseeing, and Forrest tried to alter a bill to make that less obvious. It wouldn't, quote, go public, according to the Inspector General, and he allegedly lied about it when the Inspector General interviewed him, and so he brought sort of a level of discredit on something that the residents of the city cared deeply about, and yet they were singing his praise. So it was a very odd moment.
Well, and then on top of that, the fact that when, you know, was told that there was a, you know, very serious ethical issue here involved, that then he decided to go basically lawyer shopping.
Well, he did. Yeah, right. The first there were four in-house attorneys at Chicago Public Schools. They said Ronald Marmer, the general counsel, the top attorney for Chicago Public Schools, that Forrest had hired over the objections of a couple of board members who saw this conflict perhaps brewing. And he said that, you know, he cannot oversee Jenner and Block, the firm, the major firm that he came from, in a civil rights case filed by Chicago Public Schools in an effort to allege that the funding from the state was too little and discriminatory, because he was getting paid $1 million in five $200,000 increments over yearly increments, because he had a business interest in that firm. And there were four in-house attorneys, and then Forrest went and he sought opinions from two more attorneys. One was the labor attorney for Chicago Public Schools. The other was a former general counsel for Chicago Public. They both said, oh, wait, you know, that's a conflict, Forrest, you can't do it. And then Forrest went to a seventh attorney. And that seventh attorney with whom he'd had, who had been a supporter of his politically, said, oh, it's okay. And then that's the opinion that Forrest presented to the school board. So that was sort of misleading. You know, you've got...
well, and as the Inspector General's report pointed out, there was nothing that prevented Forrest Claypool from bringing the matter before the board and seeking a waiver.
That's the tremendous irony here, is that he could have either removed Marmer from supervision, or if he thought that he had this, quote, all-star team that he apparently told the Inspector General he had, could have gone before the board and said that Mr. Marmer is not profiting directly from this particular contract. So it doesn't violate the intent of the ethics code, which is to prevent profiteering, which was Forrest's position all along. And then the board could have voted to give him an exemption, which they almost certainly would have done in this case. But the reason, according to the Inspector General's report, that Forrest did not do that was because he didn't want it to, quote, go public, because he would have certainly got a couple of days, a day or two of bad publicity. Oh, he hired his old buddy, and he's letting his old firm oversee this suit, that, you know, and getting paid a good amount of money for it. But instead, he decided to not bring it to the board because he didn't want those couple days of bad publicity, and it ended up being a career-ending move because he was trying to avoid a bad story or two.
Seems like often it's always about the cover-up.
The cover-up, even the Inspector General said that. It was the cover-up was more serious than the underlying offense here.
We're speaking with Hal Dardick, my colleague from the political team at the Chicago Tribune. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson. If you heard that promo for tonight's Blackhawks game, actually they're bringing the tumbleweeds from Glendale over to the United Center. Blackhawks are home tonight against the Coyotes, and we're looking forward to a big victory, as well as John and Troy's broadcast of the game tonight. And you can catch it right here on WGN. Joining me on the phone is my good friend Hal Dardick, colleague of the political team at the Chicago Tribune. Hal, I want to shift gears and talk about the candidate petition filing, as well as, frankly, the whole issue of our front page story in the Chicago Tribune today, issue of the property tax system, the latest of the investigation into Cook County property taxes, and the man at the center of that, Joe Berrios. And Berrios is facing a primary challenge. Is it significant?
I think it is. He's facing actually two candidates. One was kind of a surprise, which was part of my busy week this week. But Fritz Kagi, who is an asset manager from Oak Park and has a lot of support from sort of independent Democrats across the county, some of whom have you know, organizations that can turn out some vote, and it's really interesting because it's sort of at least for regular Democrats, it almost is an act of treason to oppose Berrios, considering he's chairman of the Democratic Party, a close ally of Michael Madigan, House Speaker, and chairman of the state Democratic Party, of course. And but interestingly enough, there's a press release out this morning. There's going to be an announcement later today that two congressmen, you're going to have Danny Davis and Robin Kelly endorse Fritz Kagi, which I think is an acknowledgement of the impact that the story that my colleague Jason Grotto, first for the Tribune, now for ProPublica and the Tribune, has exposed in a system of assessments, the property tax assessments, that is unfair and favors, in many cases, wealthy folks over poorer or less affluent folks in neighborhoods of color often. And what happens is they get assessments that are lower, so they pay less than their fair share in property taxes, and the affluent communities and the poorer folks end up making up the difference, so they're paying more in property taxes, making what is a 20th or a 19th century agrarian system of taxation.
That's my line. That's my line. You can't use that.
Sorry to steal that from you. But, but Mr. Kagi's got some money of his own. He's put some into the race. We'll see what other kind of contributions he gets moving forward, because it'll take a lot of money to take on Barris, who of course gets, and this is part of Jason's work, contributions from lawyers that practice, that do property tax appeals before the assessor's office. So he gets a lot of money from those folks, which some people think is a conflict of interest. And, of course, one of the gubernatorial candidates, Chris Kennedy, has tried to highlight that as part of his campaign. So you have a lot of pushback against Joe Barris. There's also, and I need to mention this, a property tax consultant, Andrea Rala, who joined the race, and everyone's not quite sure, you know, why she's in at the last moment, and we'll wait to see whether she survives any petition challenge and stays in the race and on the ballot.
But it is kind of interesting, as you point out, this kind of how Barrios, in some respects, is becoming a target from within the ranks of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, no, it's very interesting. I find it interesting that this morning that we get news that Robin Kelly's going to endorse Kagi, because she, of course, was an ally of Tony Preckwinkle, who's also got a primary challenge. And Preckwinkle and Barrios are longtime friends and allies in the Democratic Party. So, yeah, it is interesting. I think it's going to be a real race. I think it'll be more of a race, perhaps. Of course, you know, one never knows. It's still early, and the primary's in March. But then former Alderman Bob Fioretti taking on County Board President Tony Preckwinkle.
And a very good segue, Hal. You should come in here on Sunday mornings. I'm all for it. No, but I mean, but seriously, you know, and to me, you know, people were wondering about, you know, who's going to take on Tony Preckwinkle, given the fact that, you know, 2 years ago, that it would be perhaps unthinkable in a Democratic primary. But because of the fizz of the ill-fated and now repealed soda pop tax, the circumstances surrounding that, you know, made her politically, I thought, very politically vulnerable. But yet, there wasn't, other than, you know, really Fioretti, there wasn't a big outpouring of people to take her on.
No, some people were anticipating, especially because people figured that the beverage industry, which fueled the campaign that brought the repeal of the pop tax, would put some money behind a formidable candidate if they wanted to take on Tony Preckwinkle. But you have an alderman who placed pretty low in the last mayoral contest and couldn't win a state Senate seat, running against her, trying to make, you know, a comeback bid. And I don't completely discount him, because you're right. I think Preckwinkle is somewhat vulnerable, if not a lot vulnerable, because his pop tax was just so widely despised, because there were strong forces behind it and people that might be willing to get behind someone else. We'll see. Bob Fioretti did get a contribution from 7-Eleven recently, and forget the amount, but it was a fair amount of money, which is interesting because those are that's of course part of the anti-pop tax forces. But you know, it's going to take a lot to be Toni Preckwinkle, not just because she's a party regular and because she has the ability to raise lots of money, but because outside of this pop tax and perhaps the sales tax increase, things that voters aren't real crazy about, she is viewed as a no-nonsense overseer of county government who's championed reform in the criminal justice system, and who has, you know, reduced the size of the county workforce and has strengthened the health system. So, you know, that's why I see almost Barrios being more vulnerable to Kagi, and not just because of the assessment thing, which, you know, is so arcane, and yet people have seemed to be attuned to it now, but because of nepotism in his office and the image of the old school patronage supporting poll.
All good things to watch if you're a political watcher, particularly in Cook County. Hal Dardick, thank you so much, as always, for joining us this morning. I appreciate it very much.
All right. Thanks for having me, Rick.